Lovely to see everyone. Just changed location today, but we're in the same virtual location, and that is let's spend a little bit of time learning together. Our focus today is going to be trying to unpack the last part of Perek Yud Aleph. This is the central part of Perek Yud Aleph in Sefer Melachim Aleph, and the focus is the devolution of Shlomo Melech's Malchus. We've seen that he's not been 100% living up to the type of lifestyle that David HaMelech had lived up to. HaKadosh Baruch Hu reprimanded him, and now we see some of the complexities of that as it plays itself out. Let's take a look over here. I did send out the sources earlier. In case you don't have them, let's just take a look at it in the Pesukim. What we're going to do is we're going to focus on essentially three satanim, three adversaries that are going to rise up against Shlomo during his days. And here we go. What we're going to do is we're going to read from Pesukim Yudalit to Chavay. These are going to be the first two adversaries. And then we're going to look at the next one afterwards. So let's take a look at this. Try to read this with a broad mind and try to appreciate the perspective as we read these Pesukim and ask ourselves, you know, how much is HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing and how much is a human being doing? A critical question when reading this section. We're told the following: Vayokim Hashem Satan Lishlomo. So we know that Hashem establishes some sort of Satan. The word Satan is translated here in the JPS 1917 translation as an adversary. So Hashem allowed an adversary to be established against Shlomo. Eis Hadad Ha'adamim Yizera Ha'melech Hu Be'edom. So he is a seed of the king of Edom. At this time, Vayhi biyos David es Edom ba'alos yo'av esar tzva likboriah sachalalim vayach kol zachar be'edom. We know that when the campaign of Israel was fighting against the Edomites, the Yoav was burying the corpses because the campaign was to kill all males. V'kisheshes chadashim yoshav sham Yoav kol Yisrael ad hechris kol zachar be'edom. They essentially eradicated all the young men, so there was not going to be any armed revolution against them. They killed all of them. And at such time, Vayivrach Adad, hu v'anoshim adomiyim, me'avdei haviv, v'itoy lavoi mitzrayim, v'adad na'ar katan. So they escaped, and they went to Egypt. He was young. Just to appreciate the geography of this for a moment, just to remember that Edom is in the southeast corner of Israel. So if you go down to the south and you move eastwards, just in that corner is where Edom is. So for anybody to escape, to go to Egypt, essentially is to move underneath or through Israel, down to Egypt, to the Sinai Peninsula, to Egypt to escape. So this is what happens, what ends up happening. And they took with them a group of people from Paran. Paran is one of the deserts there. Vayavo Mitzrayim el Paran melech Mitzrayim, v'yitzen lo beis bayis v'lechem amalo eretz nosan lo. So he gave him shelter, he gave him a place to stay, he gave him everything he really needed. And there was a great relationship which was started between Pharaoh and Hadad, this exile scion of Edom. And in fact, he allows Hadad to marry the sister of his wife. So this obviously is, you know, there's obviously a very cordial relationship, to say the least.
And
she has a child whose name is Gnuvas. So much so, obviously, it's not just family here. There's more than that. Is the child Gnuvas of Hadad grows up in the chambers in the palace of Pharaoh among his own children? Right, we've heard such a story beforehand in the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu being that child from another nation who grows up in the palace of Pharaoh. We have a similar situation which goes on over here. V'Hadad, then we're told, V'Hadad Shama b'Mitzrayim ki shochav David emavoisav v'chimes Yoav saratzavah. Now, Hadad receives the tidings that David is dead, that Yoav has been killed. Vayomer Hadad el Paro shalcheni va'elech el arzi. You know what? Time has come. Please send me back to my land. Meaning, I'm still in culture an Edomite. Please help me get back there. Vayomer el Paro ki ma tochasari mi v'inuchamu va'kesh olech esel arzecha. What are you missing here? Why do you need to go back? And if you think about it from a perspective today, in Western culture. In Western culture, what's the greatest achievement in society is essentially freedom from. Not freedom to necessarily, freedom from. I can live in my house, I can have money to put on my table, I can make decisions about my entertainment and my convenience and the lifestyle I lead. And so what Pharaoh is saying is, you have all of that, right? You have all the conveniences and amenities. You have a foot into the throne chamber. What else would you want? And what he's answering him is that that's not enough. And it's interesting to notice that in the spirit of a human being is this will and desire, freedom to, not just freedom from. They want to do something bigger. He understands that his cultural identity is Edomite. He was wronged. His family was wronged, and he is seeking revenge. And therefore, he says, "Vayom Eloi ki shaleich teshalcheni, send me off." So that is our first satan, our first adversary, Hadad, the disenfranchised refugee, the man who has become close to Pharaoh, returns to his land. I do want to just make an asterisk right over here and to just generate further thought about the relationship of Israel and Edom, Israel and Egypt, more importantly. You know, just if you're reading the news right now, there's a murderer. Her name is Ahmed. No, what's her name? She's a Jordanian Palestinian woman who was instrumental in the Sparrow bombing in 2001, one of the most deadly terror attacks. And she was released in a prison exchange in 2011, and Jordan accepted her and is refusing to extradite her. So right now, this week, there's an amount of pressure because one of the murdered was a young girl by the name of Malki Rosen, who was killed, and based on an American citizen who is being killed, America's putting pressure on Jordan to extradite this heinous terrorist. She's caught on TV proudly laughing about how many children she killed in this. So she's not an unrepentant monster of a human being. And what's interesting is that America offers foreign aids to Jordan and says, you know, if we're going to carry on offering foreign aid, if we want to listen to your discussion about annexation and so on, you need to act like an ally. And when you have a person who's finding refuge among you, who's a dissident to our state, that is not a acceptable proposition. So a similar kind of thing we need to think about over here, just transposing that conversation to here, is that how acceptable is it that Egypt, whose daughter, Sheshach's daughter, is married to Shlomo, is now harboring a person who clearly has ill will to Israel? And you have to ask yourself, you know, so Pharaoh, where do you stand exactly? Where are your allegiances in terms of the relationship with Israel? This is a complex question. It reminds me of the mission in Pirkei Avos is that you've got to be very careful because from the reshus, from a political power, because as the Mefarshim say, they take you when they want you and they reject you when they don't want you. And that's important to realize over here. Shlomo Melech felt that he created an alliance with Egypt through his marriage with the daughter of Pharaoh. That's all a good and wonderful until Pharaoh has other ideas. Just to put things in perspective, this is during the rule of Shlomo Melech. Okay, so this is Satan number one. We now look at Satan number two. This is in Pasuk Chof Gimel. We're told, Vayakom Elohim lo Satan, and he now establishes another adversary, Es Rozoin ben El Yoda, Asher Barach Me'ez Hadad Ezer Melech Tzavah Adonov. He was, this fellow, whose name was Razon ben Eliada, was a servant of Hadad Ezer, the king of Tzova. Tzova is which city today? Tzova today is still, unfortunately, Olav HaShalom, really, but it's the city of Aleppo, up in the north, in what used to be called Syria. It's very hard to know, you know, if Syria is still a country after all of the self-destruction it has mutilated upon itself. But nonetheless, so Aleppo is where Hadad Ezer was the king. One of his servants was named by the name of Razon. Vayikvoitz alav anashim vayhi sar gedud baharoig David oisom vayelchu damesek vayeshu bo vayemlichu ba damesek. So this group, this band, escaped the purges of David HaMelech in Aleppo and managed to escape to Damascus and gathered a group, ruling group there. Vayhi satan li Yisrael kol yemei Shlomo, and he became an adversary to Israel all the days of Shlomo Melech. Ve'ezara asher Hadad, and the evil of that Hadad had also, and the negativity that he performed. Vayakotz bi Yisrael vayimloich al Aram, and he reigned over Aram. Aram is the kingdom in the north. He hated Israel. So you see a lot of interesting things here. You see two political adversaries. They are outside the borders of Israel. They're starting to create problems, and these problems are going to continue, and they're going to be exacerbated over time. And suddenly, Shlomo HaMelech disappears. So we start reading this. A few things are just worthwhile realizing when it comes to reading this, and that is, we're so used to reading the news with the glasses of, you know, we'll call it Western contemporary scientific glasses. We've lost the ability to be able to read things, we'll call it from the Tanakh glasses, where you look at something and you appreciate that there's actually a divine motif over here. One example of this, and this is a very extreme example, is this very, very famous statement made by Rav Sadia Gaon. I've searched far and wide to find it, and here actually on this pasuk, the Kara Kemach, Rabbeinu Bachaye, quotes this Rav Sadia Gaon. He says a phenomenal thing. And he is actually commenting on the book of Iyov, something which actually we're learning in Nachyami right now. The book of Iyov describes how, the premise of the book is there's a conversation between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and this Satan. And the Satan says that Iyov is only serving you because he has it all. He has wealth, he has children, he has health, he has everything he needs. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives license to the Satan to slowly take away everything of Iyov except for his life. And that leads to the philosophical conversations and dialogues between him and his friends that are the rest of the book. Generally speaking, the way we understand it is that conversation is a conversation between some sort of celestial being called the Satan and between the Ribbono Shel Olam, between the Almighty. However, Rav Sadia Gaon says there's another way of reading this. And listen to this I would say, very shocking way of understanding the book of Iyov. In the first source here, he says, Agon Rav Sadia, Piresh, Ki Satan, Hu Adam Mamash. The Satan is not some sort of, you know, angelic being. It is a human being. Voyam Katreg is Iyov, Mitoich Sina, Vekina, Shahoseloi, Alatzachosoi, Valpri, Goidel Maasov Atovim. He was a jealous neighbor. He was somebody who, every time that, you know, Iyov pulled in his Maserati into his driveway, the fellow would be looking through his blinds and saying, you know, oh, that Iyov. How could he be so successful? We went to college together. I don't understand. We took the same classes. Why is it that he married such a fine woman and has such healthy children? Why is it that he seems to go on vacation all the time? I don't understand. Why is Iyov such a lucky guy? And he says, angels. And so therefore, it's actually the way that Rav Sadia Gaon understands it is that that means to say that the Satan over here was not some sort of angelic being, it was actually a human being who now brought this kitrug to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and perhaps who even, if you want to take it one step further, who might have even been the one who exacted some of this. Meaning to say, when this jealousy was brought to the table, either could be HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was now exacting the justice because of the questions of the Satan, or could have been that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave license to the Satan, as it seems from the Pshat HaPsukim, to be the one to do this. And therefore, in a very terrifying way of reading the book of Iyov, you have a human being who's exacting the justice. That's a terrifying thought. Where does we get this from? So here's one of the proofs in the pudding that he brings is at the end here, on the last line, he says, V'araya, ki ha-satana zehaya adam, mishu lashana kasuv, from the pasuk in Melachim Aleph, Perikud Aleph, V'yakim Hashem satan mishlamo, es hadad ha-adami, our pasuk. So we see that the satan is, in fact, the agent of Hashem, who's a human being. That's a fascinating perspective. Meaning, what Rav Sadia Gaon is saying is that we need to read news, the newspaper, very subtly. Example being, is that let's say we read the news, we read about a terrible person who's doing certain things and has become a real issue to all of to Israel, to society in general. Often what we do is we blame people, we blame situations, we blame geopolitics, we do all kinds of things. But we don't take the next step in saying, Vayokam Hashem Satan. Sometimes Hashem establishes these really bad people. He gives them license to be able to do what they're doing. And there's a message to be learned from this. There's something we need to be learning from this. Iyov needed to understand that this wasn't just a bad person, this was Hashem, and that's why he questioned Hashem. over here. We see now political dissidents, refugees, people who are generating unrest. But Tanakh is telling us, don't just read it as, you know, enemies and terrorists and so on. Read it as this is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of exacting the justice that was necessary against Shlomo HaMelech. And to that point, the Abba Barnel points out that actually we need to reread one of the psukim just ever so slightly, because it says, "Upirush kol yemei chayav shel Shlomo." It says, when it says all the days of Shlomo, these people were troublemakers. It's only referring to the days after Shlomo HaMelech allowed his wives to practice Avodah Zorah under his jurisdiction. That was when this all started, which means what Barbara Nell is saying is that clearly this was a theological problem. This was not simply a political issue. And he should have realized that from the fact that the problems only started when his spiritual portfolio was falling as well. He also points out, as an interesting aside, the Sipera Kosov says, Abba Barnell, Sheze a razon levadai ulay aloha yochol hastines Israel. Razon himself was not, perhaps, didn't have the clout to be a mischief maker sufficiently. Kim ba'avur hara'a asher hayo'oseh hadad ha'adami and nizkar lemala. Unless he had, along with him, Hadad, who was also this bad person. Shehu hayos siba po'eles b'chol amim milchama, which was the way the war of attrition began. V'zehu amru va'es ha'ra'ad asher hadad v'yakotz b'Yisrael. Kulomar shenizchabra ra'as hadad. So the negative intent of Razon and the negative intent of Hadad converged to create an alliance of mischief. And that's what is being said over here, which means this adds to the argument which is being made. And that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing this to happen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is allowing human beings to find each other to create the problem that's going to be necessary to be able to punish Shlomo HaMelech. So this is just a different way of reading things. You know, it sort of, you know, it reminds you of thinking about things like, you know, you hear about, you know, Hamas and Iran. You know, Iran funds Hamas to a certain degree. They also spy on them. But, you know, so one without the other. So Iran doesn't have a foothold near Israel. But they do have, you know, so like you have over here, Hadad and Razon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows certain evil forces to converge when there's a message which is necessary to be sent over here. This, to me, seems to be laying the groundwork. This is planting the seeds for the further problems that we're going to be experiencing in the nation of Israel's history. So here, this is step number one. Step number two is now we read about another dissident. But this person is going to be, unfortunately, even more serious to Shlomo HaMelech than the two we've looked at beforehand, before Hadad and Razon. And the reason is because, as we're told, is that the worst of our destroyers, the worst of the antagonists to the Jewish people are often Jewish people. And it's an unfortunate reality. Even on campus today, I was speaking to a student. They were on campus, and BDS was trying to pass a resolution. You know, of course, they're not very much concerned about any of the other atrocities going on in the world, but apparently Israel seems to be a very important case. And so they were trying to pass a resolution, and the charge which was laid against them is, this is anti-Semitism. Why are you targeting Israel? And of course, one of the Jews who was on the border for BDS and SJP said, no, I also support this. So if the Jew is saying that this is not anti-Semitism, there's very little you can say then. A lot of the times, unfortunately, the Jews have got a very very good history of social activism. And sometimes that social activism gets pivoted in the wrong way. And so some of the most dangerous people are found to be among the Jewish people themselves. Here's an example, and we're going to see that this example may start off well, but it doesn't end well. So here we go. We're told three psukim, v'yiravam benevot efrasi min tzereda, v'shem imoit tzeru'a, isha amona eved lishlomo v'yarem yad b'melech. So we're told about Yeravam ben Nevat. He comes from Efrati. Efrati means he comes from the tribe of Ephraim, and he lives in the city of Tzereda. We've seen Tzereda in the Mishnah, actually. And he is the son of this widow Tzeru'a, who's a servant, and he is a servant to Shlomo, and he rebels against the king. He raises his hand, literally. And even today, if you look at the riots, whenever you look at any riots, the raised hand is always the sign of rebellion, of challenging norms. This is the reason why he raised his hand against the king. He built the Miloy, which was this congregating area just outside Jerusalem, outside his palace, and he closed the holes in the wall. It's the entrances of David his father. Strange, a little bit of an oblique reference here. Va'ish Yeravam gibor chayav va'yar Shlomo es anar. And Yeravam was a strong man. He saw Shlomo as a Shlomo saw this in him, and he appointed him as a tax as a sar sevel lechol sevel bal sevel, which is understood by the Mefarshim to be a tax farmer. So he's going to be the one to collect taxes in the house of Yosef, because naturally he is from the house of Yosef. So that makes a whole lot of sense. A lot of things to notice over here. First, just interestingly enough, in the Pesukim, we do know another, it's interesting, the name Tzeruah, which is the name of his mother, is dramatically similar to another person who in Tanakh whose name is Tzeruyah. And that was also a her. And that was also, in fact, the mother of a very mighty warrior. And that was Yoav. It's interesting that Yoav, Avishai, and Asael were all B'nai Tzeruyah. Tzeruyah was not their father's name, it was their mother's name. Just as an interesting thing, that was spelt a little differently, as opposed to Tzeruah with an ayin. That was Tzeruyah with a yud. But nonetheless, it just should be interesting, reminiscent, so to speak, of this power, this powerful individual named by their mother. There should be some sort of parallel. It should be raising its head here. More than that, just a few interesting things to notice over here. Why was it that this fellow, this Yeravam, was so upset with Shlomo? So the suppositor tells us two reasons. One is building the Milo, and the other one was closing the gaps of David. Don't sound like such egregious sins, do they? Right? That doesn't sound like that makes the cut for a rebellion. So there are a few number of Varshim deal with the Rabbi Nilk, so he makes a number of suggestions. He says the following. He says, here we are. He says on the top of page 3, he says, Bono es hamiloi, from the very top. He says, V'asher loy rotsoliv nois David aviv, leman yihye boy to eles, le'asev shom Yisrael ba'aloi sam leregel. David Melech never built the miloi. That was the advantage would be so that all of Israel would gather there, or like large gatherings. V'hu bono osoi levas paroi shahoyo shom beisoi kamosh nizgar. If you look at the geography of the palace of Shlomo Melech, the house of the palace of the Bas Paro, who is his wife, one of his wives, is adjacent to the Miloy, which means that what Yeravam was publicly suggesting, is that Shlomo Melech is taking public funding and is misappropriating it for personal use. Yes, it's true that the Bas Miloy is going to be used for the community, and it's going to be a large public venue, and the king will give addresses there, and the state events will be able to occur there. Of course, you go through the licensing process through the office of bureaucracy, but in the end of the day, really, it was a function of building and making nice the garden for Bas Paro. So and this accusation does ring true a little bit in a certain sense, meaning it's probably both are probably true. It's probably true that Shlomo Melech did build the Beis Miloy for the people, and he also probably did build it for his wife, who had a very long list of expectations, it seems like. And so what Yeravam is doing is he's capitalizing on the injustice in the complexity of Shlomo Melech's reasoning, which he's publicizing. Another reason. He feels that Shlomo Melech is guilty of something even worse. He closed the gaps of the ear David. Ratzelamar shayosham beis David choma perutzah pesach pasuach kadesh yuchlo Yisrael lavoy al melech kashiyirtzul lefanav direiru osam who sagar osak kadesh leishma haadam. And he claimed that Shlomo Melech was closing all the entranceways so people could not just, when they wanted to present their court cases in front of the king, as David HaMelech was always accessible and available. Shlomo Melech was not interested in this. He had more important state issues to be dealing with. What is interesting about this is that John's trying to understand the truth of that is hard. It's a little harder to really know what the truth is in this. We haven't heard about this beforehand. It could have been that he was just doing renovations. It could be that he had a more, basic, level of access control. Is it for the reason he didn't want to hear people? You know, Shlomo Melech is the first king we hear about it with the court cases, the miraculous court cases that he did have in front of him. So it's hard to know the truth in this one. It could be a little level of interpretation that Yerovam is rendering here. And finally, the last over here is he quotes Chazal. Chazal in Sanhedrin say, Amru, Shaj, Amar Yerovam, David Avicha, Paratz, Paratzos, Bechoma Kadeshi, Yalu Yisrael, Regal, Vatagadarta, Osam Kadela, Asos, Angaria, Labas Paroi. You closed the access so people could not do Aliyah LaRegel, that people could not come and make the pilgrimage on the festivals. Is this true? Is it not true? Was his accusation right or is it wrong? Unclear. But these are accusations that he starts making. Once again, it sounds like what the accusations are is that you're doing something which is about being a very personal as opposed to something which is communal and national. This is clear. Now, one thing which is also interesting about, just if we go back to these psukim, the order of these psukim seems a little bit confusing, because we're told the first, Yerovam makes a rebellion against Shlomo. Why does he make a rebellion? That's the second pasuk. Second pasuk is two reasons, closing the gaps and the Beis Miloi. Third pasuk, Shlomo Melech sees that he is a gibor chayil, that he's a strong, he's a valorous man, and he appoints him as a tax collector. Doesn't that seem a little strange to you? Meaning, that's not what you would like to do. If you see that this person is publicly, attacking you, you would want to actually perhaps get rid of them more than appoint them as a tax collector, which leads most of the Mepharshim to actually say. Most of the Mepharshim says, he has an example of the Mesudas David says in Source 4, Vayivkoro soy me'az ad lo yehrim yivboyod, minayal seve balas yosef, rotzalamalik bois mehem hamas. This happened all beforehand. So if we read this psukim, the first pasuk is doing something which is called academically telescoping, which means to say that if you sort of like it's all, the whole story is like collapsed into one pasuk, so this is going to be the summary of the whole story. He has Yerovam ben Nevat, he's going to rebel against the king. That's the story. Now, let's talk about the details. Let's start at the beginning. So he was first a tax collector. So that's going backwards. So chronologically, it's just a way of telling the story. It's sort of almost the first two pasukim are the header, and thereafter are the details. That's the way that the Mepharshim understand it. However, perhaps I would just like to suggest that there's another way of looking at it, and that maybe it actually is in sequence. And that could be like this. Shlomo Melech sees that there's a person who cares very much about justice, a person who cares very much about transparency, a person who doesn't take gray matters as acceptable. So he says, you know what? I think you're the kind of person I'd like to invest in. Perhaps as there's a famous quotation which is attributed to a number of people, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. Shlomo Melech might have been doing, perhaps over here the methodology was, he was saying, you know, let me make sure that I know what this person's doing. He seems like a very charismatic, he seems like a very powerful person. Let me ensure that I know where he's going to be. Let me put him as part of our cabinet. I'll have him as one of my appointees, my delegates in the northern region. Okay, something which is worthwhile appreciating and thinking about over here. Okay, so now, what actually happens? So now we hear about these three aggressors. We have Hadad in the Hadad and Razon externally, and we have Yerovam internally. So now the story continues. We're told the following. This is going to be our next chunk of psukim from Choftes to Mem. We're told the following. Vayhi bo ayis ahir, at that time. Yerovam yatsa mirushalayim v'yimso oisoy achia hashilon hanavi hanavi. So he finds a person by the name of Achia Hashiloni, who's a prophet. He comes from Shiloh. And he is on the way, he's wearing a new garment. He takes what ostensibly is the garment of Yerovam. It could be that it's actually Achia's himself, and he rips it into 12 separate pieces. And he says to him, "Vayomer lo Yerovam, kach locha asara kraim. Take these 12 tears. Kicho amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Hineni korea esamamlocha miyad Shlomo v'nasati locha es asara hashvatim. Asara hashvatim. I'm going to tear away the kingdom of Shlomo, and I'm going to give you 10 tribes. Vashevet echad yeloi leman avdi David. I'll leave him one tribe in order for the sake of David, his father." And for the sake of Yerushalayim, and I'm going to And I'm going to, because of all the different gods that he served or allowed to happen, service in, under his jurisdiction. I'm not going to take everything away from Shlomo. I'll leave him as a king all the days of his life. Because of David who kept his my mitzvahs. And I'm going to take the kingship from him and I'm going to give it to you, these 10 tribes. And to Shlomo's son, I'll give one tribe, Leman Heyos, near to David, and know that David HaMelech will have a space or place, Kol HaYamim Lefonai, Yerushalayim, Ha'ir Asher Bachartzi, Ba'ali Lo'asum Shemisham, that my name should be in the place where my name should be, which is in Yerushalayim. And I'm going to make you the potential king of Israel. And it'll be im tishma es kol asher atzaveka. And if you're going to listen to everything, I'm going to command you. And you're going to listen, go in my pathways. And you're going to do what's good in my eyes. Then I'll be with you. And I'll make you a true house. I'll give you all of Israel. I'm going to afflict this. Seeds of David, but not for all the time. After Shlomo Melech sounds like gets wind of this, he tries to kill Yeravam. And now Yeravam escapes as a refugee to Egypt. Once again, just raising the question of the loyalties of Egypt. Isn't Egypt his? Isn't this his father-in-law? Right. So, wouldn't Egypt care about this? Apparently, not enough. So again, here we have another dissident who's finding place in Egypt. A lot of things to think about in this. This whole imagery here is very, very powerful. Before we get there, who is Achia HaShiloni? So it's a very, very mysterious character. Appears a number of times in Tanakh. Seems to have a very long life. Here's an example of how long his life could have been. The Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that in terms of the length of life that he lived, that there were seven people who between all of them, there was a, what's the word is, kopluas kol ha'olam. They were able to teach, transmit the Masorah from one to another throughout all of time. Who are these individuals? So the Gemara in Bava Basra, Kuf Chafala from Abayi says, Tanu Rabbanon, Shiva kopluas kol ha'olam kolam. There were seven people who covered the entire world. Metushelach ra Adam, so Metushelach saw Adam and was able to converse with him. He lived, remember, he was the longest living human being, over 1,000 years. Ra Adam, Shem Ra Metushelach, Shem the son of Noach, met Metushelach. Remember, he died just before the flood, Metushelach. Shem Ra Metushelach, Yaakov Ra Shem, as Shem. We know that Yaakov learnt in the Yeshua Shem Ve'er, the very end of the life of Shem. Amram Ra es Yaakov. Amram, who is the father of Moshe and Aaron and Miriam, saw Yaakov, you know. Achia HaShiloni Ra es Amram, Eliyahu Ra es Achia HaShiloni Va'adayin Kayam. And Eliyahu HaMelech is the last, the seventh and the last link to through this whole chain over here. So you see something fascinating, and that is Achia HaShiloni is a rather long link in this chain, if you think about it, because he saw Amram, who was at the time of Exodus, and he then lived to the times of Eliyahu HaNavi, and assuming, as the Mefarshim assume, that Eliyahu HaNavi is not Pinchas, otherwise you wouldn't need Achia HaShiloni now. That means to say that Achia HaShiloni lived from the times, certainly at the tail end of Exodus, certainly through to Menachem Aleph Perek Yud Zayin, which is a very extensive amount of time, at least 400 plus years, 500 plus years almost. In terms of understanding the length of time. So he's this mysterious prophet who appears. It is worthwhile noting that he is from Shiloh, which means to say that he is from the tribe of Yosef, from Ephraim, which is fascinating because that means to say that he is a prophet from Ephraim talking to a potential king from Ephraim. So here you have, so to speak, this convergence of the heir of the tribe of Yosef taking over, which actually leads us to an interesting point. The tearing of this garment, yeah, you know, he could have just said to him, you know, like, so listen, Yeravam, you're going to be king and it's done for Shlomo. That's what he could have said. But that's not what he does. He does this whole business of the tearing. Why is that necessary? Well, just highlight one very fascinating principle over here, which the Malbim brings up. The Malbim suggests this numerous times across Tanakh. He says in source 7, Vayikra'a, Chazal nechleku baze im karash salmas achia oy salmas ravam. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin is dispute whether it was the garment of achia or the garment of Yeravam. But nonetheless, Mavor etzlenu, he says, but it's clear to me, Shadavar hanavua, Shatavoy imo eze pu'ula, hi muchrachas liskayem, veloitavutal b'shum ofen. In the end of the day, it is more likely, not more likely, it is 100% clear that a prophecy which is done with an action will be incontrovertible. It will not be able to be revised. Whereas a prophecy which is just with words has the potential to be changed and revised. And therefore, the reason why Achia Shiloni is ripping the garment is to crystallize this nevuah, this curse upon the house of Shlomo, in a way that cannot be changed. We see this elsewhere in Tanakh. The Malbim is based on a principle which is found in the Ramban, the beginning of Parshas Vayilech Lecha. The Ramban is commenting on the fact that all of Avram Avinu's travels act as a precedent for all the children, what we call Maaseh Avosim Labanim. Now, Maaseh Avosim Labanim doesn't mean to say that we look into the Bible and we say, oh, it wasn't that nice that Avram Avinu did this and we should also do this. What he means to say is that no. In a certain sense, the actual spiritual structure of the people is formulating, and because it was formulated with a action, that becomes now fused. There's no way to change that. And so the Malbim says this numerous times. The Ramban actually, the examples the Ramban gives later on by Elisha. Elisha talks about shooting arrows towards Aram, and each of the arrows indicates destruction. The fact that he only shot a few as opposed to a lot was seen as a problem. Another example is by Yirmiyahu dropping a scroll into the river as to indicate the fall of Aram. So these actions accompanying the prophecy render it much more concrete. Similar thing is happening over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making sure that this is not going to be undone. What I always wonder in this whole episode here, and I think it's a question that all of us are challenged with, and that is that, is Yeravam a good person or a bad person? Is Yeravam an agent of evil, like, let's say, Hadad and Razon, who are not good people, who are simply going to be the vehicle of retribution? Or is he no? He's actually a good person who could be the potential king. And without doing too much research yet, it seems pretty clear that it seems that that he is supposed to be the king. He's supposed to be favorable. He's supposed to be the person who could replace Shlomo and the line of David to a certain degree. Yes, David's line will have a sort of a trickle. There'll be one tribe and there'll be a continued, ruling over Yerushalayim. But it sounds like, from these psukim, that Yeravam, if he were to listen, were to ultimately to be the king. Which is a fascinating, fascinating thing, because ultimately, Yeravam does not listen to this. Yeravam does not live up to his mandate. But the potential of psukim is that he could have. Here's the way the Chumash Anach, the Chidah, points out in what I think is just a remarkable insight. He says, the Salma Chadasha, he's wearing this new cloak. Why is that important for us to know? He's Amru Chazal, but Perek Chelek, he quotes the Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin. Ma Salma Chadasha ein boi shum doifi, after Raso shel Yeravam loy hayabo shum doifi ein shum. The fact that he's wearing this clean tunic, this unblemished tunic, is a sign of internally that there's no blemishes, that Yeravam is a pure person. The fact that he's seeking justice is not just because he's looking for his own personal aggrandization. He's actually, in fact, a person of great spiritual harmony. That being the case, that's why it's reflected in his tunic being full. The Ramaz zeh besalma ki mi Torah ki mi Torah naaseh chaluka. Derabbanon of a sefer dekutei Torah legori Arizal. He quotes the Arizal, who says, or the Talmidim of the Arizal, dahayon nitzoytz Yosef atzadik, that Yeravam Nevat was the Arizal used to do this a lot. He would say he was a Gilgal. He was a spark of the soul of Yosef atzadik. One of the 12 tribes was reincarnated in Yeravam. Uvischar v'tispaseil bebigdoi v'amad benisayon, and because he, when his garment was grabbed by Ashes Potiphar, he left it in her hand, even at the knowing that he would be accused falsely of the crime. When he did that, he left the evidence in her hands. After all, by doing that because of his own moral ethical knowledge and knowing what his father had taught him, zochal l'salmo chadosha. He later on, this same character, as he reappears in history, will have a Salma Chadasha. And similarly, V'chena Rezal, Shagosh Baruch Hu Tafsal B'Bigda. Shagosh Baruch Hu grabbed him on the coat, so to speak, metaphorically. What you see over here is a fascinating insight here. And that is that we shouldn't just be reading this as a micro story about Yerovam ben Nevat and Shlomo HaMelech. We should really be rereading Sefer Bereishis, Parashas Vayeshev, Parashas Miketz, and Parashas Vayigash. We should really be trying to understand this in the context of the relationship of Shlomo, of Yosef and the brothers. Yosef was seen to be giving visions of grandeur, of being a king, and his brothers felt very threatened by that, and they got rid of him. And we seem to be seeing a similar kind of thing over here. Yerovam over here is now castigating, is criticizing the side of Yehuda. And that's seen as a dangerous thing. And Shlomo HaMelech Bikesh Lahami Yisrael wants to destroy him. We know that there's two wives to Yaakov Avinu, Rachel and Leah, the two primary wives. And their two scions, their princes, are the prince of Leah is no longer Reuven. He was rejected to a certain degree. And Shimon and Levi also bypassed that. The real king of the children of Leah is Yehuda. The king of the children of Rachel, of course, is the firstborn who retains his firstbornship, which is Yosef. And there's this tension between Yosef and Yehuda. If you actually want to read Parashas Vayeshev as the story between Yehuda and Yosef, it'll give you a new way of getting perspective of what's really happening here. That's what's happening there. It seems over here that David HaMelech was given the opportunity of having Malchus from the tribe of Yehuda. It doesn't seem like the Malchus is going 100% according to plan. And therefore, at this point in time, who comes in? The brother from Yosef. A prophet from Ephraim, a person from Ephraim, is now seen as the new successor, not simply as an agent of punishment and retribution, but also as the idea of who he's supposed to be. He's supposed to be now the potential new king, the king of Yosef. That's what seems to be described over here. I would also add to the Chida one last interesting wrinkle, and that is that, yes, it's true that he's wearing the Salma Chadasha because Yosef escaped and left his garment in the hands of Asher's Potiphar, but there's another garment of Yosef which is also important, and that was his Kesones Pasem, the indicator of that of his uniqueness and specialty which his father gave him, which was in fact violated and used as an alibi when dipped in the blood of the goat to make it seem as Chayara Achalasoi, that an animal consumed him. It's interesting now that this prince of Yosef, generations later, the spark of the soul of Yosef is wearing the Salma Chadasha, which is this new garment which is going to be representing the division in Israel as well. I also want to point out one little interesting thing, and that is that the Maggid of Mezrich would say that that from the time that the Malchus split, from the time that Shlomo Melech's dominion was broken away, and this is what's starting here, there was never a moment in history where a person could talk truth, could talk about Torah, and escape without being castigated by somebody. There's always going to be one, at least, in the audience who's going to have something to say. And the Maggid of Mezrich says that it started from this moment in time when division became part of Knesset Yisrael, Klal Yisrael. Another interesting point, which is also pointed out, I saw a very beautiful idea, is the following. Take a look at Pasuk Lamed Zayin. This is a very important lesson in life. And in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, we're told, V'oyesecha ekach, and you, I'm going to take and I'm going to make you, you're going to rule over everything you want, and I'll make you a king over Israel. So I heard a Hasidic insight, an anonymous Hasidic insight, that the way it works is the following. There's a triage here. There's a sequence. And that is, Umolachta b'chol asher taveh nafshecha. You need to rule over every desire in your heart. First thing comes is control yourself, become a human being, and then Vayisa Melech al Yisrael, and then you can be a king over Israel. And that's true about many, many positions of public office. You can become a king over yourself. You can rule over all your women's indulgences and frailties. Then you can become a Melech al Yisrael. Then there's a potential. Until then, you know, we'll call you. So that's what seems to be said in this pasuk, and ultimately that formulation becomes the downfall of Yerovam, because he's going to have problems, and those problems are going to disqualify him from being king of Israel. Let's read the last section over here. This concludes our framing of the section. This is the last three psukim over here in Perek Yud Aleph to Mem Gimel. V'yeser divrei Shlomo v'kol asher asav v'chochmazoi halohim k'suvim al sefer divrei Shlomo. The rest of the stories of Shlomo are written on the books of Shlomo Melech. V'ayamim asher malach yishlamo b'Yerushalayim al kol Yisrael arba'im shana. He ruled for 40 years. This is more than David HaMelech. David HaMelech ruled for 33 and 7. 7 over Hebron, but only 33 over all of Israel. Shlomo HaMelech ruled for 40 good years. V'yishkav Shlomo imam osav v'yikov ebe'ir David aviv v'yimloch rechavam b'no tachtav. And he is buried in the city of David, the citadel of David, and he is succeeded by Rechavam. So just I just found it fascinating to work out where is this reference, where is it being written, all these extra stories of Shlomo that we don't know about. So in Divrei Hayamim gives us a little more of a clue as to where we can find this. In Divrei Hayamim, the parallel version of this in Divrei Hayamim Beis Perek Tes, we're told Shah Divrei Shlomo Rishonim VaAchronim Haloim Ksuvim Al Divrei Nosan Anavi Val Nevuas Achia Shiloni UvaChazoyes Yado Achoze Yido Achoze El Yerovam Benavat. So we know that the other prophets also wrote about Shlomo HaMelech, and we can find the teachings, their teachings, and therefore find out more about this. So just to understand a little more, I call it diversity of where these matters are to be found as well. What are the lessons learned? A lot of lessons are learned over here. We're not going to read through all of this. So here, the Abarbanel has a long, lengthy essay at the end of this whole parak. Remember the way that Abarbanel looks at the Sifrei Tanakh, which I feel is very appropriate in the way we're trying to do things as well, is that he looks at Tanakh not in parakim, but rather in sections, thematic sections. This is the end of the thematic section. And so at the end of the session, he has a long essay to describe some of the lessons we can learn from here. One of the things he does say we can learn, and it's a very telling lesson, is that Shlomo HaMelech had everything. He had strength, he had wisdom, he had dominion, he had honor, he had all these attributes, and ultimately within a flash, they all disappeared, all went away. And so, meaning to say, and he gives examples. So, you know, Shlomo HaMelech was the most sought after, most respected leader. But at the end of his days, the people who are now antagonizing him are people who are slaves. You know, Yerovam is a slave, ultimately. That's what we're told, right? He's who Eved. We know that Razon was an Eved. Even Hadad, he says, is from the scion of a king. He points out that none of these people were great individuals. But all of them together, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows them to rule over him. Everything disappears in a flash. His wisdom, his insight into people, because look at his misunderstanding about his wives and the way things run. His power, his money, all these things are going to, the Abarbanel points out at the end of the day, the end of Shlomo HaMelech's days, we don't hear about the taxes anymore. That could just be because we know about them, or it could be because the partnership with Hiram and the Phoenician fleets and all the trade, maybe that went south as well. So it could be that there's more complexity than meets the eye, and therefore the Abarbanel kind of closes this all up with the words really, which are to be found at the end of Koheles, is Sof Tavara Kol Nishma Esalekim Yira, that in the end of the day, after Koheles, which is Shlomo HaMelech, sees all of this and he sees all the different things that he's tried to pursue in life. In the end of the day, the only thing, the only value which cannot be taken from one, the only value which is long lasting, which is everlasting, excuse me, is ultimately Yiras Shamayim. The rest of the things, they come and they go. There's no way, it's not a good idea to plant your flag in them. And that seems to be the lesson which is learned. And perhaps when we read Koheles, we can read Koheles a little more background, a little more context to understand some of the journeys or the character of Koheles that Shlomo HaMelech created in order to understand his journey. This ends the section now. We've finished Perek Yud Aleph. This ends the series of Years of Prosperity, which was a 7-part series. And now this now unfortunately lays the groundwork for the next step, which is the split of the kingdom.